credit is one of those things, because it's likely one of the very first lessons about money that people learn at a very young age, because there's all of this sort of concern that people are going to get sucked into credit, abuse credit, and that is going to ruin their financial life. And what I realize is that a lot of people sort of learn about credit early, sort of carry those lessons through adulthood, but don't really take the time to actually relearn or figure out what's new. And the reality is a lot has changed with credit over the last couple of years, specifically, or I should say particularly, because of the continued sort of integration of technology. Technology and data is impacting everything that we do. We're not going to get into all of those topics today, though. We're just going to focus on how it's impacting credit. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today we're talking about what's new with credit.
Credit.
I know. I feel like everybody was like, oh, come on now.
Credit is actually, it's interesting as we've been diving into this particular subject. It's a really interesting financial topic. It's also very polarizing. I feel like there are two like pretty clear camps. There's the camp where it's like, all right, I'm team, absolutely no credit, minimize credit, or avoid it altogether. And then there's the other side of that, which is, hey, I'm all about it. Give me all the points. Give me all the rewards. Give me all of it. I want to build and design my life around being able to get free nights and free sort of cash back.
There's not a lot of room in between. None. There's not just people who like, yeah, I mean, I use credit, but I don't I'm indifferent. It's okay. It's fine.
Yeah. It's really, really interesting. You know, it's also interesting because if you think about the beginning of our sort of combined financial journey, it is a journey that started kind of about credit, right? So a little bit of backstory here. Not that I am the one that really wants to sort of rehash this particular story, but basically when we first met, we started dating pretty quickly. We took a vacation together, and long story short, after that vacation, we were supposed to split it. I learned that Kirsten had no intentions of paying this off, and I was all about ready to get back, paying off my balance in full. And so really, you could argue that we are here because of credit. And it's sort of funky. No?
It's a reach.
It's a reach.
We are here because I'm a catch. You're a lucky man.
You are a catch of a giant credit card bill. I love it.
I actually tweeted a meme the other day that said, like, here's a tip on how to improve your credit score. And the only thing it said was pay them people. It tickled me when I read it. And I'm pretty sure that, like, it's our most popular tweet ever. Like, people just went crazy over just the fact that, like, it's that simple. If you want to raise your credit score, pay them people.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the face of the super popular TikTok guy. Maybe you guys have seen it. If not, go to our Twitter account, and you'll see exactly the face that we're talking about. But there's a guy who's super popular. I think he has the largest audience in the world on TikTok, something crazy, like 45, 50 million or something.
He just kind of shrugs.
Well, he doesn't even talk. He just shrugs. Best job ever behind being a podcaster for Success.
But I think it's like you said, people, you know, understand credit. They know that there are these polarizing sides, but I don't know that anyone's looking to, like, continue learning about innovation in the space. You just know that it exists.
And that's exactly why I wanted to have this conversation, because as I started thinking about and sort of flipping through some of these different topics, I was like, you know what? Credit is one of those things, because it's likely one of the very first lessons about money that people learn at a very young age, because there's all of this sort of concern that people are going to get sucked into credit, abuse credit, and that is going to ruin their financial life. And what I realized is that a lot of people sort of learn about credit early, sort of carry those lessons through adulthood, but don't really take the time to actually relearn or figure out what's new. And the reality is a lot has changed with credit over the last couple of years, specifically, or I should say particularly, because of the continued sort of integration of technology. Technology and data is impacting everything that we do. We're not going to get into all of those topics today, though. We're just going to focus on how it's impacting credit. But before we do that, we also want to give a big shout out to the team at Success. So in addition to this podcast, we also do monthly webinars that are hosted in the Success Achievers community. They're also posted on the Success YouTube channel. So you want to check those out. But if you want to see a much broader sort of perspective of what Success has to offer and what we do with Success, the best place to start is likely the Success Achievers community. You can visit that or join that community for free at www.achievers.success.com.
All right. So there is a lot that's new with credit, but we're going to focus on five today that we think are pretty interesting. And again, even if you're not interested in credit, if you have a young person in your life that is starting to build their credit, or you have someone in your family who's trying to build their credit, this might be really helpful for you. So the five things that we're going to cover are the different types of credit scores and what they're being used for, the new relationship between credit cards and cryptocurrency, credit cards with no fees, digital payments and wallets, and then masked credit cards.
I love it. All right, that's a lot to cover. And every time we sort of have 3 to 5 things, we tend to run over a little bit.
So let's
try to streamline this conversation. I will kick things off first with talking about the different types of credit scores. So I think most people have heard the term FICO. FICO is an acronym for Fair Isaac Corporation. It is a company that came up with the FICO score, and it is basically the gold standard of credit worthiness, to the point where people sort of use credit scores and FICO scores interchangeably. It's kind of like Google. Google mm-hmm. is one company. It's a search engine, but the term
it's not
itself,
the only search engine.
It's so ubiquitous that we just sort of say Google. You can literally Google something on Bing or Google it on Yahoo. That's how sort of strong that brand is. That's essentially the sort of similar weight that FICO holds. Well, FICO is one type of credit score, but it's not the only one. There is another one called the Vantage Score. Now, the Vantage Score is actually one that was not started by FICO. It was actually started by the three, or what they call the big three credit bureaus, which is TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. If you know anything about credit, you are likely familiar with those terms. But those are the big credit bureaus that came together and said, you know what, we want something other than FICO for reasons unknown to me. But so there are some similarities, but there are some differences as well. So what's similar about them? Well, the way that they sort of measure their score is just about the same. The range can be as low as 300, though I've never met anyone with a literal 300 or even in the 300s credit score. I think Issa on Insecure? She was in the fours.
I think she was in the fours.
It was something ridiculous. I've never seen that. But it goes a similar range from 300 to as high as 850. And the way, or the factors that they are sort of paying most attention to, are just about the same. And so those are, one, total credit usage. Two, the credit mix and your credit experience. Three, your payment history. Four, the age of your credit history, essentially how long you've had that credit, and five sort of new accounts. But what makes them different is the weight that, let's say, FICO versus the Vantage Score places on each of those particular factors. Mm-hmm. But there's another big difference too. And so if you know anything about FICO, maybe you've been dealing with a lender, or hopefully not a collection agency or something like that, but you may have had a conversation where someone is asking about when specifically my credit is going to be pulled. That's likely because FICO scores are the dominant score, and they are very specific, meaning the date that credit bureaus submit information is sort of tied to when FICO sort of assesses or analyzes their particular scores. So you might, let's say, have accrued more debt or opened new accounts, but if it was done sort of after a certain cutoff date, it's not going to show up on a credit report or affect your credit score until that particular date. That's just how FICO chooses to analyze their scores. The Vantage Score, I believe, sort of solves for that sort of issue by actually paying much more closer attention to trends in all of those factors over a period of time. So, you know, I think that actually makes it likely a little bit more specific or up to date, and less concerned with, let's say, you sort of having a ding or even a positive impact 30 days ago or 45 days ago. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of the Vantage Score?
No, but I heard of something similar to this. There was a company, and I wish I could remember the name off the top of my head. There was a company that had created their own score specifically for immigrants and for people of color who have a hard time establishing the things that FICO biases.
Yeah.
So something like age of credit history. Well, if you've only been in the United States 2 years, you look like you don't have credit. But if you have a history of, you know, recurring paychecks or paying rent on time, they would factor in all of these other data figures to come up with a score that was more indicative of your credit worthiness than these sort of legacy indicators that FICO uses.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There are like several, like, so most people, I want to say it's the FICO score 8 that most people are likely familiar with or that most sort of lenders use, but there are like over like 20 different FICO scores. There are, I want to say like 8 to 10, I don't know specifically, but tons of different Vantage scores, but there tends to be one in particular that most people sort of use. So just something to know, guys, there are multiple credit scores out there. They're not all FICO scores. That's just one type of score. There's also the Vantage score. And so whenever you're signing up for, let's say, a credit monitoring or a credit sort of dashboard program or service, we have a list of those on our website. They're likely going to give you a little bit of both.
So one of the things that we learned about Vantage scores when we were researching for this podcast is that they've actually tweaked their scoring model to pay less attention to things like tax liens and judgment, or any medical collection accounts that are less than 6 months old. And this is really cool because I actually have a friend whose mom was in the market to buy a house recently, and they got all the way to the end of the process and were finalizing the mortgage when the lender found this old tax lien on a business that she used to co-own with someone else.
Wow.
And so she lost the deal. And it was heartbreaking, and it was really, really unfortunate, not just because it was like the perfect house for her, but also because she had no idea about the lien.
Yeah.
And when she was able to contact her business partner, they were able to get it cleaned up really quickly after the fact. But it just goes to show that like the old scoring model can be really unforgiving. And so some of these new models are, you know, just more understanding of life that happens.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I think it's one of the other benefits of having multiple credit scores, because you may have one credit score that makes you look absolutely pristine, but then you'll maybe look at a Vantage score and it's not nearly as high, even though the sort of range is the same. That might be sort of an indicator that there's something there that you might want to take a look at, or maybe talk to a credit counselor to see if they can dig in to make sure that you don't miss out on a deal.
All right. The second thing that's changing with credit cards are the incentives. So we actually did an episode a while back on points hacking. It's episode 5 for those keeping score at home, where we talked about how credit card companies pretty much gamify spending with points and miles to try and earn your loyalty and get you to spend more money. Like that is the entire intent. Well, credit card companies have gotten hip to the crypto craze, and so now they're offering cryptocurrency as a reward.
Love it.
So two of the most popular cards are from BlockFi and SoFi, and they work pretty similarly to cashback cards. The biggest difference is that instead of cashback or statement credit, you earn cryptocurrency. So let's say you spend $500 a month on a card that earns you 2% back in crypto rewards. You could redeem those rewards for $10 worth of Bitcoin, and then your crypto would be deposited instantly into whatever exchange or wallet that you use.
Nice.
Yeah. So the upside to this is an obvious one. This is a really easy way to dabble in crypto without spending your own money, so to speak. Like, it's still gambling, but you can think of it as like gambling with the house's money instead of your own. And it's just a very passive way of participating in this, you know, new asset class with minimal risk. How's that for a disclaimer? I don't know. I use a bunch of different words to try not to call crypto an investment, but depending on where you are, like, it either is or it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a new way to, you know, see some things. Yeah. But there are a few downsides. One being that you probably won't have access to the full crypto universe, which, you know, consists of thousands of coins. Most of these card companies limit which coins you can invest in, but almost all of them offer, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are the two biggest, most stable coins. And then another downside here is that crypto is still not a stable asset, right? There are some coins that are more stable than others, like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But generally speaking, it's a pretty volatile currency, especially when you're comparing it to common card rewards like airline points and the US dollar.
Right.
those are pretty reliable. And even though like gas prices and travel prices are variable, the currency is still more stable than crypto, because crypto, you know, depending on the coin, can drop or gain anything from like 5% to 50% overnight.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a while since I've seen like a 50% drop. So maybe it's stabilizing even more. I don't pay that much attention to it.
SHIB just went up like 30% last week.
Well, I'm talking
Shib
about
Shib is the dip. New meme coin. Oh, dips.
Yeah.
There'll probably be a sell-off soon.
Well said. Probably.
Yeah.
I love it. No, listen, this is wild, but I'm all for it because I think there are a lot of people who are on the fence for justifiable reasons with cryptocurrency, but this is a great way, to your point, to kind of dabble. And if you think about traditional loyalty programs, and we know actually quite a bit about this because we used to work for a hospitality company, and so we've seen the inner workings of these co-branded credit cards. And the reality is, they're not designed to appreciate in value. They're designed actually to depreciate in value so that they can actually be profitable programs. That's actually, I'm not going to say not the case with cryptocurrency, because you do have the potential for it to decrease in value, but you certainly don't have an upside.
Right.
Like, I've never seen a world where you have 100,000 loyalty points or miles this year, and wow, I just checked my account, and next year I've got 250, and I haven't gone anywhere. That's never going to happen, but that could happen
with crypto.
A cryptocurrency
for
card.
Sure.
So there you have it. If you're on the fence, maybe getting a credit card and using that as a way to sort of dabble into crypto is for you. All right, so moving on to the third trend, which is credit cards with no fees. Now, we have sort of seen sort of no fee credit cards in the past. That in and of itself is not exactly new, but now cards with like absolutely zero fees, and by that I mean not just annual fees, but I'm talking about the transaction fees, foreign transaction fees, annual fees, late fees, like all of that stuff are essentially stripped away. No fees whatsoever. And I'm primarily thinking about Apple Card here, which in and of itself is just crazy, right? So this is not a co-branded card with, let's say, Visa and Apple are teaming up together, or American Express and Apple. This is Apple, the software company, saying, hey, we're going to launch our own card. It works just like any other card. And they can do this because it's such a brand that's so powerful. And what, half the world or something like that has an iPhone. And so they've got all of these other things and they know so much about us. They're kind of taking it a step further with the Apple Card. I remember when this first launched, I kind of ignored it because I was like, I don't know what this is. And I think I just assumed it was a co-branded card. But as I started looking at it a little bit more, I was like, wow, this is actually really interesting. And so in addition to not having any of those fees, they do something with the payments where it's actually designed in a way to encourage people to pay off their debts even faster. So it's still a credit card, meaning it's not completely free. You're still going to pay interest on it if you sort of carry a balance over time. But when it's time to make that payment, they're actually going to calculate and give you very clear opportunities to pay off that debt as fast as possible. And I think typically it's, hey, you're going to pay a minimum balance, you're going to pay statement balance, outstanding balance, or like they'll just say other. What Apple is doing is really expanding that other and saying, hey, don't guess. These are the options that are designed in a way to ensure that you are going to pay off this debt fast. And so that seems like they're actually not trying to make money off, let's say, the credit card in a traditional sense. What they're really trying to do here is to build more and more loyalty with the Apple Card itself. And so they are giving you incentives or, let's say, boosted points back for using Apple Pay. They are giving you even more of a discount if you're buying or purchasing Apple products, or buying things from Apple platforms like iTunes or movies or something like that.
Yeah.
But then they also have the standard cash back functions that your typical credit card may have, which is usually like 1% or 2% for like gas stations and grocery stores or something like that. But I think the card itself is pretty cool. Personally, I don't have it. I'm not exactly drawn to it.
Yeah.
But if you're a huge Apple fan, and I think if you're someone who really struggles with sort of managing your fees, and you just like the convenience of not having to carry a credit card because you can now use Apple Pay or be incentivized to use it with the discount, this might be the card for you.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of it. I just don't think I'm cool enough to use it. Like, I feel like my life is not digital enough. Or maybe my life is too analog, because my questions are never about the sleekness of the product features or just, you know, it's all about usability. And so for me, I'm like, how do you pay in a restaurant when the bill comes? Like, am I supposed to hand her my phone?
Well, you
like,
actually do have a card. So they give you an actual card, but there's very little sort of incentive to use it. Now, to be fair, you can load just about any of the cards into the wallet, but you do actually get a physical card if you want one.
Oh, okay. But I also read that it's a MasterCard, or it's like a MasterCard payment. MasterCard is the payment processor.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
So places like Costco and like other retailers that have exclusive agreements with another type of card, I wouldn't be able to use it there. So, yeah. You know, that's not specific to the Apple Card, but that's one of my reasons, two of my reasons why I don't have it.
Oh, you sound like an Android user. She's going to find a reason to not like this Apple Card.
Okay, before we move on to the fourth thing that's changed, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. All right, we've already talked about the three... Sorry. Okay, welcome back. We've already talked about the different types of credit scores and what they're being used for, crypto rewards cards and no-fee cards. So now let's talk about the fourth thing that's changed, which is digital wallets. So this has been a long time coming. I'm so happy to hear that this is like starting to take off. And I didn't think it would ever just like hit mainstream. But if you can look at the moment that QR codes are having and we're still not even using QR codes the way that they can be used. Like the QR code is a very specific piece of technology. And like all we're doing is using it to like show a menu. Like
we could
actually complete the entire payment process through QR codes. But no, let's just show the menu. Anyway, it gives me hope that digital wallets can have the same quick adoption as QR codes.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. But let's talk about what they are. They are exactly what they sound like. Instead of carrying a physical wallet or a purse with tangible coins and dollars, your wallet is essentially your phone or your watch or some other piece of wearable technology that stores your payment information. And instead of swiping a card, the tech in your thing, whatever you're wearing or carrying, pings the tech at the point of sale, and the transaction is completed between the two robots. Like, you're not even involved in the situation. So I was slow to adopt digital wallets at first, but I realized how freeing it is to be able to move through the world without, like, needing a purse. It's like that first feeling you get when you unbutton that top button after you've had a really big meal at a table. Where it's just like, woo, my stomach needed that.
I was preparing to say I don't know the feeling because I thought you were going to say bra.
Oh, I was going to say bra, but I want to stick to the wins that I'm having with the food analogies.
Oh.
So okay. I'm going to say unbuttoning the top button at the dinner table.
I support you.
Yeah. All right. So back to adoption. Retailers and the credit card companies have already started to adopt digital wallets. Many of them have updated their point of sale systems so that you can complete payments with like a few taps on your phone, and even the credit card companies have started putting, you know, different technology into the chip itself. So you can just kind of hover your card above the thing instead of inserting it. So it's really nice to see that like we're starting with the hardware, and then all it's going to take is for people to change their minds about how they interact with their cards every day. So there's a lot of great benefits to having a digital wallet, the first of which being security. So your cash and your cards are completely vulnerable. They can be stolen at any time, and there's not really any tracking devices in them. So once it's gone, it's gone. With digital wallets, your biggest risk is being hacked, but a lot of that can be managed with encryption technology and just general good protocol with passwords and things like that. Another benefit of digital wallets is that they have less fees because of the limited overhead. So banks, you know, make enormous amount of money, like you were saying, by charging us fees to hold money in our account. And digital wallets eliminate a lot of those expenses. But the third benefit is my favorite, which is the speed of processing. Traditional banks have a lot of legacy software that prevents you from getting your money quickly. So like, for example, day before yesterday, I deposited a $3,000 check with our traditional bank. And I used mobile deposit, which was a win. I could do it from my phone. I didn't have to go to the ATM or to the teller. But because of their processing timelines, I only had access to $400 of that $3,000 on day one. And it's like, well, what if I was depositing that because I needed to also pay my mortgage or daycare or some other big expense that day? You don't get access to your money all at once, which is some bull.
Yeah.
And the same is true for like transferring money to loved ones. If you needed to send any large sum of money to maybe an older parent that you're caring for, or maybe you support somebody in your family with student loans, or, you know, just helping them with money every once in a while, digital wallets like Venmo allow you to send and receive that money instantly, unlike traditional banks.
Yep.
And Venmo is a really popular digital wallet because you can even have your paychecks deposited directly and they can arrive up to like 2 days earlier than if they were, you know, deposited into your regular bank account. So bringing it back to credit, before I fangirl over digital wallets, it's possible, at least our theory is that it's possible that adopting a digital wallet can actually reduce your dependency on credit. If you can get your paycheck 2 days earlier, or you can quickly borrow money from a friend or, you know, shoot money to a family member and then get it back 2 days later when you need it for your own bills, it can help you and them avoid getting into like really costly debt.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what impact digital wallets and digital payments have on actual spending habits. Mm. I feel like it's still a little new to be able to make a sort of firm stance, or, you know, I'm sure there is some data that suggests one or the other. But if I had to guess, I would say there's likely no difference.
You know, it might actually increase spending. I could be completely wrong with the hypothesis, because on the one hand, like, people thought Uber would get rid of like people wanting cars, like less people want cars if you right. just get a ride everywhere.
Right.
But then, you know, things got expensive and they had a lot of issues with scaling, and car sales have never been higher in history. So I could be wrong.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I will say I'm a big fan of digital wallets too, but not necessarily because of credit cards. I'm actually really excited. Georgia, where we live, is actually one of the very first states that is going live with being able to upload your driver's license into your digital wallet as well. So if you think about, it's not a good thought, but like getting pulled over by a police officer, you don't have to dig into your wallet. Oh gosh.
Oh, that's where you were going.
That's actually not what I was thinking. I was more so excited about like TSA pre-check. It's just one less thing.
Oh, I hate fumbling with the wallet.
It's so ridiculous.
Yes,
it's like ridiculous. One less thing. Here's my wallet. It's got everything in there. I really wish, honestly, like my passport or just.
Yeah, I should be able to put everything in there. My vax card.
Absolutely.
Everything.
Yeah. So that's actually why I'm more excited about digital wallets. But, you know, the credit
card
stuff.
That ain't got nothing to do with credit. We're talking about what's new with credit.
Well, I will bet you this time next year, I guarantee you everyone listening to this podcast will have adopted, to some degree, digital wallets.
Somebody out there is making a reminder in their calendar and like is purposely not going to adopt
it will be the
digital
norm.
Wallet just to come back and be like, you said, and you were wrong.
Everyone is not so vindictive.
That's true. Everybody's not my kind of petty.
Right. We set a reminder. I'll tell him. All right.
Last but not least, masked credit cards.
Masked credit cards. So these also go by the term virtual credit cards.
Yes.
And this is actually pretty cool. So if you think about all of this innovation, and then you think about all of the growth that we've seen in online shopping and e-commerce, naturally and unfortunately, this has led to a huge spike in identity theft, especially over the last year or so. And so this is where masked credit cards or virtual credit cards come into play. They are very, very helpful. Basically, here's how it works. You use it in tandem with your actual credit card. So if you have a card and the actual card number is 123456789, you can actually get a masked card with a completely different card number, expiration date, and security code. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that masked card is like a dummy account. So if for some reason your information is compromised, let's say like in a data breach, which, let's just keep it real, this is happening far more often than it has in previous years, going back to what I was saying about the sort of growth in the space and reasons for more and more security. This is where a masked card can actually be really, really helpful. It essentially protects you from fraud and makes sure that your real credit card data and your account isn't sort of compromised, quite honestly, when there is a breach with a retailer or some other type of organization. The other benefit here is that it allows you to even like share details much more easily.
Right.
So let's say you just needed to give somebody a credit card number to handle a quick transaction or something. You don't actually have to give them your real number. You can give them your masked number, and it's sort of, you know, a lot easier for you to protect yourself in the process and make sure that if that information is compromised, that you can delete that number much more quickly and essentially create a new mask card or a new virtual card in the event someone sort of tries to steal your data or you are compromised. So they're really, really helpful, but there are also some downsides that you should consider. There are several, actually. A couple of those downsides. So one, this only works online. So it's not like you're going to get like a fake dummy card and then go into the store and use your dummy card. This is primarily to protect you against online shopping and using your card in a virtual space. Second is it kind of creates complications with returns. And like, I hate returning things anyway, but you know how oftentimes that is tied to the actual credit card. And so just imagine, like, it can be a pain in the butt just trying to get, help them find the transaction for the original credit card. Now you add another credit card, it just gets messy. To your point, there are a lot of old and dated legacy systems behind even some of the most innovative companies out there. So that's a bit of a drawback. Another one is earning credit card points. So if you are that sort of point junkie that we were talking about earlier, oftentimes your loyalty program is tied to your actual card number. Then when you add a mass card number, you may not necessarily trickle down and allow you to earn the points that you're looking for or take advantage of bonuses or all that stuff. It can get a little messy. And then the last one is it's just another card, another thing that you have to actually keep up with. But I will say, if you're using, let's say, like a browser extension or some type of software that actually generates a virtual or masked card for you, well, then you should also be able to just use the autofill function so that you actually don't have to commit that card to memory. So, yeah, there are some benefits, but there are some downsides. I kind of feel like the benefits outweigh the downsides, especially if you've ever had to deal with like identity theft. Like that is awful to deal with. And so if that's you and you don't have a masked credit card, maybe you have some type of protection, you might want to add this to the repertoire just to make sure that your information is safe.
Yeah, it seems so logical. Like when you say it, it's like, that's how it should be. Like we shouldn't just have one.
There shouldn't be any real numbers out there.
Everything should be anonymized. Yeah. I always struggle saying that word. I think it's anonymized where the number isn't actually the number.
Yeah, I'm just going to say masked.
I don't like the word masked. I was thinking as you were talking, like who named it the masked card? Like, it sounds like a superhero or something.
Well, yeah. My first thought was Jim Carrey.
Like, I don't know what I would have called it. And as you were talking, I was trying not to get distracted by figuring out, like, what would I have called this card? Virtual credit card makes sense.
I would have called it a ghost.
Ghost card.
Ghost card.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Okay. And it's Halloween tomorrow, too.
Oh, I see what you did.
Ever the clever one.
All right. That was a lot of information. So let's get down to final thoughts. I'll start. My final thought is to pick one of these things to dabble your toe in. And my recommendation would be digital wallets, because you can do that with your existing credit cards. It doesn't require you to change anything or look anything up or buy anything. You can just implement a digital wallet. And I know that it can feel a little scary at first, but I think that we should start to think about digital wallets the same way that we think about digital cameras. Like, I'm old enough to remember the wind-up disposable camera.
Ooh, I can hear it now.
Oh, my gosh. And how cumbersome it used to be to take pictures with film, and that you wouldn't know what pictures you got. You had to turn it all in, wait, and you'd be super excited if it was ready within an hour. That used to cost money to see your pictures within an hour after you've already taken them. But now, you know, all of our photos are on the phone, and we're just used to a world where if you want to see them printed, push a couple buttons, go to a physical store and pick it up or have it mailed to you, whatever you're into. So I think the point I'm trying to make is that just because you make something digital, it doesn't mean that you lose access to it. In most cases, it means the opposite, that you're going to get more access, more autonomy, more flexibility, and more freedom because you already have it pretty instantly and can get to it at any point.
I love it. My final thought is that really doesn't matter whether your motivation is convenience or security or rewards or whatever it is. This is actually a really cool opportunity to just kind of dust off your memory as it relates to credit cards. Again, I think it's one of those things that we've sort of learn as we're sort of mastering the ABCs of money, but that you don't really learn anything else about credit cards until something happens.
Right.
And then when it comes to innovation, a lot of us don't really sort of explore innovation unless it's forced on us. So when you think about all the hoopla that we went through when we had the transition from magnetic strips to chip cards.
Oh my gosh.
That was innovation that was pushed to us, right?
Yes.
We were forced to do it, but there were other things that we could have done to help make sure that we were more secure even before we were forced to swap out and get rid of those old cards. So I would say think about that moment that we were in and all of that frustration, and then start looking into all of these new innovative products and technologies to help add more convenience and security to your life on your terms.
Before it's forced on you.
Before it's forced on you. You didn't have a choice.
The robots are coming. Like, as I said earlier, the POS systems are changing. Like, it will be forced on you.
And it is happening.
It's happening.
Very, very quickly. So this is our way of saying, you know, get in front of it. Take advantage of these things before, you know, you're kind of don't really have a choice and then you're stuck with it.
Dang.
That's the world we live in, man. It's a cold world.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, please give us some boom credit by leaving a 5-star rating and review.
That was pretty obvious, though.
I mean, it was good, though.
If you didn't see that one coming.
I mean, I did telegraph it. We'll see y'all next week.